From Podcast Detroit Studios in the heart of the Motor City, it's time for your source for Blue Collar Talk, the ARC Junkies podcast. Here's your host, Jimmy McKnight.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, what's going on? Welcome to episode 30 of ARC Junkies. I'm your host, Jimmy McKnight, and today I'm very excited because on the ARC Junkie lines joining me is Wes Mishler from Grand Blanc, Michigan. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. So let's get into this a little bit. I'm following you on Instagram here. Looks like your company is Wicked Welding. Let's get into what Wicked Welding is and what Wicked Welding actually does.
Yeah, I opened up Wicked Welding about, well, it's going on, it'll be 4 years this upcoming summer. More or less, I opened it up because I was working for a company that I wasn't really advancing in. I think a lot of people can kind of relate to getting these welding positions where you're kind of stuck because there's nowhere to move up.
Mm-hmm.
And the company I was working for, it was a smaller manufacturing company, and I was kind of, they gave me the title of welding engineer there, kind of just a way for me to make a little bit more money.
Yeah.
I don't really have any type of engineering background, but I was doing all like their fixture design, you know, got to learn how to use SolidWorks and stuff like that there. And with that being said there, you know, I was working there for a little while doing that. And it was like, there's still no advancement. I was still welding every single day doing all this. And the wage wasn't really there. And me being a guy that's trying to, I'm building a family and things are getting more expensive. And I was trying to look for other ways of trying to advance my income. And I felt like going out on my own, I could possibly do that. You know, I could, you know, work the jobs I want to work and work the hours I want to work, you know, flexible around my family. So I had been doing work for a while for a guy doing these hitch systems, welding them on the side, and which I still currently do at home. And I was talking to him about doing more work, taking on welding work. And he said, you know what, if you're down for it and you think you can get to work, I'll help you out. We'll get you started. So I'm currently in the shop next door to this hitch manufacturer. We're in like a big building that has multiple bays that people rent out. I do his welding for him at night, every single night, every day, every week. I still do the welding for him on the side. Because it takes up too much time during the day in order for me to do it during the day also on top of doing my work.
Right.
So I set up shop next door. We share tools. Like, we own a bridge port together because he uses it. I use it. We have a saw, a high low that we share. So that kind of helps me out, you know, not having crazy overhead with all his tools. So we kind of share a few things. So I've been next door to him for about four years now. And I, right now I just take on, I'm a kind of a job shop. So I got some steady customers now. I got like three or four steady customers that I constantly get work from, the same products from, doing tanks, doing off-road suspension components for GMC Colorado company that does the aftermarket parts for them, those trucks. I do filtration systems, piping, all kinds of stuff for a few different customers constantly. And then I'll get the everyday call in, hey, can you fix this or can you make this, small jobs. That's what I'm doing currently.
You know, it seems like every welder gets to the point where, you know, they've hit that road where you're at, where it's like, you know, you're not really advancing. You're just kind of, you've plateaued. You're at the highest wage that you're going to get for the area that you're in or the work that you're doing. And we all get to that point where it's like, we really want to step out on our own and be our own boss, you know, and make our own way in this. And what you're saying, you know, is you really are doing it. You've taken that step to get started in doing this. My question is, you know, were you worried about getting work and how are you going about getting work? Did you kind of have to build a foundation first on your own of this is what you can do before you decided to start Wicked Welding and get onto your own? Or did you just kind of, balls to the wall and hope for the best?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I actually had a few customers of mine that I dealt with on a daily basis at the old shop that kind of got wind that I wasn't really happy with where I was at and I was wanting to step out. And I got a couple commitments from them pretty much saying like, hey, listen, if you take off, man, we like what you do for us. Don't be afraid to get a hold of us if you get a, get out of here. We have work for you. Not only that, I had other customers that had nothing to do with the company I was working for, that were wanting to give me work, but I just didn't have the time to do it. And I feel like that's where a lot of people come to me and ask me the same question. Like, when do you know when you can leave your day job, which pays your health insurance and your 401k and all that stuff, you know, your constant money? When do you leave that in order to take on doing it for yourself? And really, there's no defined answer, I don't think, to that. But I do believe that once side work gets in the way, I'm sorry, your full-time job gets in the way of making more money on the side, and it's consistently like that, where you get to the point where you flat out are taking time off of work in order to work, and you're doing that quite often, that's where you want to step out and maybe make that jump and that leap out on your own.
Right. You can't exactly stretch yourself so thin, you know, you'll die.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I still feel the same way that I constantly worked, but it's different when you do it for yourself. Because you get to see the reward from that work and that time, and you can manage it yourself. Like, you know, if you work for a company and you make a suggestion, hey, man, you could really benefit by buying this tool in these ways, and they just brush that off. Like, yeah. Okay, we just keep making, just keep working. Don't worry about that. We'll worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Keep making parts.
Yourself, yeah. You can be like, listen, I need this. Like, I just recently bought an Evolution saw. I didn't necessarily need it, but I had some aluminum fab work coming up where I didn't want to saw cut it, get the coolant all over it, have to clean all that, deburr, all that stuff. And I knew this $350 saw could solve my problems by just buying that, cut it, cut the whole job up, cut my time in half when it comes to doing all the cutting. And, you know, if I work for somebody, they're like, yeah, well, you want to buy a tool for one job? No, we're not buying that. Well, I got to, you know, that's one benefit, you know, to working on your own and versus working for somebody is you get to kind of make those decisions.
Yeah, definitely.
Where you're spending your capital.
Yeah, especially when it comes to investing in equipment, man, because it is absolutely amazing. You see some of these companies, and I've even worked for some of these companies that are just, you know, multi-million dollar companies making multi-million dollar tooling with second rate welding machines and, you know, stuff that's so far behind the times, but it still works. You know what I mean? It's absolutely crazy. And the more you try to tell them about how much better the quality could be with the newer material, equipment, or, you know, filler rod or what have you. You know, they see it as, you know, this is what's working. This is what's always worked. And they're almost like scared to change. You know, it really takes, somebody with a younger mind and more of an open mind to what's happening to kind of make the changes happen in those companies, because really they're stuck in a rut and, you know, hey, they've made millions of dollars so far. So why change now? You know, that's their type of mentality.
Yeah. Your machine's still welding, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. But like, that was one thing. When I stepped out on my own, I had my heart set on, like, when I leave, this is what I'm doing. These are the tools that I know that I can benefit from, that they might cost more than I want to spend right out of the gate, but I know in the long run will help me right off the bat. And the biggest purchase that I made that helped me out immensely and still pays for itself over time and time again was I bought a Stronghand tools table from Artzone. Mm-hmm. And I said, listen, I want this table. I want a 4x8 table with all the slats. I want this, you know, package of tooling, which the tooling I think was like $1,300 just for some clamps and stops and stuff. But I've used that table so much. Like, there's so many jobs that I've taken in that I don't know how I would have done without either investing in fixturing or spending a lot of time building jigs when I could just slap it on this table, set up a jib on this table, and it's done. Mm-hmm. And I've done that so many times where that table has paid for itself time and time again. Since I bought it. And that was one of the first things I bought when I went on my own. And then the next thing I wanted to get was a Dynasty 350, you know, because that was the big bad dog back, you know, 4 years ago. There was nothing out there that could compare besides the 700, you know, and I didn't need that.
That's a serious machine.
That's a crazy machine. It took me a little time to save up the money to get the Dynasty, but I did end up getting it because I had a big aluminum job that was production. And at the time I was running my Miller AeroWave, which was welding the parts just fine, but it didn't quite hold up to the constant well that 300 plus amps.
Right.
It would go into thermal shutdown. It would want to take breaks, and I didn't want to take breaks. And so that's when I was like, okay, it's time to get this Dynasty. And I just got it. And that thing itself, just on this aluminum work I've done, has paid for itself, you know, time and time again. So, you know, it sucks, you know, spending that big chunk of money sometimes, or however which way you got to get the machine in. But if you got the work to support that tool that you want to buy, you know, and you think it's going to be consistent, man, get that tool. Make your life easier, because you'll make money, you'll go faster, and you can use it on other jobs that you wouldn't normally take unless you had that tool. So,
yeah, I fully agree, man. I mean, you look at the ticket on some of these machines that are out there, you know, $10,000, $15,000, and it's like, you know, oh my God, you know, you can buy a car, a great car for that kind of money, you know. And you got to really kind of weigh it out. You know, it's like, all right, well, you know, this is going to pay for itself. You're right. And, you know, maybe not go get the badass brand new bells and whistles machine that's super shiny right off the market, right off bat. You know, maybe start with something a little used first before you get into that, and then invest in the bigger machine. But,
yeah,
you know, definitely you're right. Investing into your equipment is what's ultimately going to make you that much more proficient as a welder, especially as a small business owner. You know, time and material is everything when you're small business, and all the stuff that you can have to make that move that much faster to ultimately get the bottom line that you need and paid at the end of the day. You know, it's a no-brainer. It really is.
Yeah. Matt, and I'm always fearful of downtime. Like,
oh, yeah.
If I have a piece of equipment go bad. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
That was what I was worried about, that air wave. Like, man, if this thing takes a shit on me, what am I going to do? You know, I still have due dates. My customers don't care if my machine goes bad.
Right. That's your problem, not theirs.
And I was trying to be a little proactive on that one. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just get it in here. And, you know, I'll always have my air wave. It's a good machine. It's actually an awesome machine. I kind of baby it now just because it's such a pristine, in such pristine shape that I love it, and I don't want to burn it up just because I'm production welding, you know, aluminum at 300 amps plus, you know.
Right.
So
let's get into the inspiration behind your sticker, this hashtag kill all filler. How did that come about?
Yeah, that's I've been using that probably for 5 years now. That was one of the kind of the first things that kind of started on when I got on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
about then, 5 years ago. Back then I got that. It's inspired from Ken Block, the drift racer guy.
Yeah.
The kill all tires slogan that he has. And I don't know what really got me to use the kill all filler from that, but I know that it was inspired from that, back in the day. And I just started using it. Heck, I think when I first signed on with ArcZone, started doing stuff with ArcZone on the pro partnership, my first like greetings package I got from them, which they set me up with like a TIG cut kit right off the bat. When the box came to me, somebody had wrote kill all filler, hashtag kill all filler on the side of the box. You know, 'cause they knew that was my like slogan. That was, like I said, that's 5 years ago. So.
Right.
Yeah, that's about the extent of the background on that one. Like I said, it was something that, and I think even my brother Nick and I kind of came up with that. And we had talked about maybe making a Instagram page that would be like a weld porn type page where you repost welding stuff. That was kill all filler. But at the time I was like, I think there's too many of these pages popping up. So I'm,
man.
You know, steer away from that. So, but no, I kind of used it. And now that I got this graphic designer that I work with, his name is Ben, which is BT Create on Instagram.
Shout out.
I got it. Dude, the guy is awesome. I think he's helped out a lot of our welder colleagues on Instagram with their logos. He actually, when I first created my original logo, he was one of the designers on this website that was competing to make a world logo for me.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know that until I bumped into him on Instagram, and he had posted his concept logo of one of my concept logos. And I got a hold of him through that, and then I've actually had him do more work for me. I came to him a couple of weeks, about 2 months ago, I guess, and said, hey, listen, I need to come up with a kill all filler logo. I like this style. I want the American flag on it. Here you go. And that's what he gave me. It was that. I didn't make no changes to it. I was like, sweet, awesome, love it. And then I just had some stickers made and passed them out to a few friends, and now people want to buy them.
Very cool. Let's talk a little bit about your experience at last year's FabTech. I wasn't able to meet you at last year's FabTech, but I mean, man, it's only 8 months away, and I know it sounds like 8 months is a long time, but it's not. It's going to be here before we know it, man. And
no doubt.
What did you take from last year's FabTech that you're looking to enjoy at this year's?
Yeah, well, I've been to the past three FabTechs. This year's one was, dude, it was crazy. There was so many people there from Instagram that even just that aspect, just the people from Instagram was like a little overwhelming, to be honest with you. And it's hard to like keep up with who you're meeting and shaking hands with there. But, I went there this year, obviously to go with Arc Zone, and we were working with CK Worldwide doing demos in their booth on their new machine. And then we also got to walk around and have a good time with the guys. I went there wanting to look at robotic welding systems because these hitches that I weld, the guy's talking about one of production. Well, I flat out can't do more than I'm doing now. I'm kind of redlining. Me and my brother actually weld those on the side. He welds them at home. I weld them at home. But we can't do anymore. So I went there looking for a robotic welding system to kind of give him a solution. Like, listen, maybe we should get this going. We can have this thing making us money, and then you can ramp up production and whatever. So I went there. I wanted to see those machines. I wanted to see what kind of costs involved with, you know, getting set up with a cell, which actually was kind of surprised. You know, the one I looked at was like $100,000. I know it sounds like a ton of money, but for what we're actually trying to use it for, I'm like, I thought that was actually pretty reasonable. You know, you got this turntable, you got an arm that's not always welding while you're loading fixtures. And then when it's done welding, it flips around and welds the parts you just loaded. So I went there looking at, I wanted to see those, and which I did. I got to look around and get a lot of information off those, get some quotes. But next year, I didn't really put too much thought into Georgia yet, to be honest with you. I've been pretty busy, but I mostly look forward to meeting up with everybody. It's kind of like a family reunion every year going there. And that's always the biggest thing I look forward to. I mean, minus the show is absolutely insane how big it is. The amount of equipment they can shove into a building is kind of blows my mind sometimes. So I like seeing that, you know, the massive amount of equipment. But so yeah, Georgia should be fun. It'll be nice because it'll actually be warm out versus being up here in Chicago freezing our butts off trying to get to the place in the McCormick Center. But
yeah, it was windy cold. It was just windy cold that was killing us last year.
Yeah, and then in Vegas it was like warm during the day, and then at night it dropped off and it was crazy windy. So it's not like you can, you know, not go outside prepared for to be cold, you know.
Right.
So
you know, a lot of people are really on the fence when it comes to automation and, you know, getting these robotic welders, because a lot of guys are, you know, these things are going to turk our jobs and you know, as things move down the line and more production jobs become automated. But, you know, as a small business owner, I mean, you're going into this with a completely different mindset. You know, you needed something that basically didn't sleep, that could keep doing these things and making your money and making you making your production and making your numbers. So I mean, now you're looking at a machine like we were talking earlier that's either $10,000 or $15,000 that's you know, human operated versus this $100,000 machine that doesn't need a break, doesn't come in hungover, doesn't you know, ever call in sick. It just works.
Yeah, exactly. And I haven't hired anybody yet because I've trust me, there's been times where I got so much stuff going on at the shop that I like get in a panic mode. Like, I don't know how I'm going to get it all done. And I'm like, do I need to hire? And then those times you want to hire somebody, but you don't even have the time to train them with what you're doing. That just takes some time away from actually getting the job done. And the times where you have the time to hire somebody, you don't want to because you're too slow to support them.
Right.
And so I kind of, you know, and it's an up and down. And I'm really hesitant on hiring anybody because I feel like all the guys that are good at what they do have good jobs. Otherwise, they'll just go someplace else and get paid better money. And you know what I mean? Like the good guys are working right now.
Yep.
And I think that's a real issue with America's welders right now is we're lacking the real good guys that are into it. It's not so much that people they're not good or bad at it, but there's only a certain amount of people out of that group of welders that actually like doing it. besides making, just doing it for a job and making some money. You know, there, you know, you see the guys that are on Instagram, those are the guys that enjoy doing what they do, and they take it to that next level with promoting their work and this and that. So I've never really wanted to hire anybody because it's so, I'm so afraid of getting a guy come in and say he gets hurt and he just wants to sue me. And I'm like, it just freaks me out. Like, I don't know if I want to.
Oh, that dude, that would crush you at this point. You're right to be weary. That would absolutely crush you at this point. You know, you're not the multi-million dollar guy yet. You know, you gotta get there. So you're doing it right. You're right to be wary. You gotta really watch your steps when you're kind of building your empire to make sure something doesn't come through and take it out from underneath you like that would.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like the robotic welder really is, the only reason I want to get into that is if, you know, these hitches, I can make good money off these doing more of them. And this welder would just free up time for me in the evenings. I mean, I've been welding these things in the evenings for 7 years now. Well, I have four kids and I'm constantly coming home, welding for an hour or two, going in, having dinner, enjoying my family for a minute. And then when it's bedtime, I'm back out in the barn all night. So I'm trying to get some of my personal time back a little bit by possibly investing in some equipment that can make it more efficient, that can get more done in a smaller time frame so I can enjoy my family some more.
Right.
You know?
Right. No, I fully agree. And I want to touch back on what you were saying about how, you know, you feel about the problem with today's welders in America, about how it's, you know, you have your separation. You have your welders that do it for just the job. And then you have your guys that are out there that are, you know, top dollar guys. They're good at what they're doing and they're locked in. Now, on the other hand, you have the educational system broadcasting on the radio, broadcasting on the internet about, you know, we need welders. We got to fill all these jobs. We have all these jobs that we need for welders, this, that, and this, that, this, that. And it's all entry level stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's all entry level jobs. Yep. You're not offering the kind of job that is going to pay somebody something that they can actually, you know, support an entire family on by themselves. Like, times are changed. It's not 1970 or 80 anymore where, you know, you could raise a family on $17-18 an hour. You know, both parents better be making that. So it's like, you know, I get messages all the time from Indeed.com that tells me that the average wage in Detroit for a welder is like $17 and some odd cents an hour. Like, now I get it. That is better than most places that pay you, you know, 10, 11, Home Depot and all that other stuff. But at the same time, you know, with the promise of what welding is, it's like that still seems to be kind of the low ball for what the job is requiring. You know, in my opinion, $16 an hour is what you're paying somebody that doesn't know anything but is willing to put the hood down and do the job. That should be a base pay. But when you're actually required somebody to have a skill, even certifications, and you're still only going to pay them $17 an hour, that is a major deterrent. When you could go make 20, 25 doing IT, which is what everybody kind of wants to go do. They want to go to school. They don't want to go get their hands dirty. And this is where we're kind of finding that great divide. You know what I mean? It's like, yes, we need welders, but how do we make it enticing to them with $17 an hour? How do you do that?
Yeah. And we're raising a lot of, you know, and I try to raise my kids a little differently, but we're raising a lot of kids that get handed everything. So why put the effort in that it takes to become, you know, a skilled tradesman when you could just go do something and just hand you a paycheck, you know, sit in your cubicle, hang out by the coffee machine and go back to your cubicle when you can make your money doing that, not doing anything.
Right.
You know, and I think the big thing too, like when I, you know, a lot of these kids don't get a chance to even dip their toes in this type of world because they're pulling all these shop programs out of the schools. And that's where it's like, man, like I've always thought it'd be so cool to be able to go to the high school and work with a couple kids that got a shop class and show them a little bit of, you know, some tricks, you know, but there's nothing out there to even go and show these kids anything because all these shop classes are disappearing and because they don't have state funding for it or whatever. And that, to me, is sad, man. Like, I think every high school should have a shop class.
Oh, I know, man. I know.
Woodworking or anything, really.
Right.
Working or steel or automotive or any of that stuff. They need to have those outlets. Now, granted, I know a lot of kids take those classes to screw off or whatever, but you'll get the kids in there that are into that, that you know, they're going through school and they're seeing like, man, why am I in this English class? This has nothing to do with anything that I want to do in the future. Why am I in this science class? Why am I in math class? Well, it's because they're not giving them a place to apply these things, apply that math problem to this fabrication issue, you know, this science to this, you know. And there's a lot of kids out there that are hands-on kids that don't want to work in the cubicle, but they've never welded, they never tried it, and it's daunting to even think about how they would even get into it because they know nothing about it.
Right.
When you can just give them a shop class that's 2 hours a day, they get to see the equipment, get to run away the mill, a plasma cutter, a MIG welder, a TIG welder, anything. Just get them, and they'll go from there. They'll go to the community college after that, or the skills center, or wherever after high school to learn a little bit more and get themselves into this field. And that's where I think the disconnect is these kids are coming out of school and they want to go to these colleges that might may or may not offer anything like this. And they're going there with no experience of being in or near a shop. You know, they've never seen a shop before. They only heard about welding and they know nothing about it. It's just myth to them. And that's tough. That's why you're not getting these people to engage in this type of industry, this type of trades. You know,
exactly. I fully agree, man. How do they?
Welding doesn't have a union,
right?
You know what I mean? Like the stuff I do, there's no union for it. So
right.
It's not like you're just going to go to a union hall and say, train me.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, it's in different unions. Like even the carpenters union trains you to be a welder to a point. You know what I mean? It's just incorporated in different unions. And you're right. You know, with these classes being taken out of schools left and right here, I mean, how are kids going to even know what talent they could possibly possess if they're never exposed to it, especially when you're at the developmental stage of being in high school where shop class used to be? You know what I mean? How can you grow if you've never had the opportunity or shown something that you might be so good at? Not everybody's a doctor and a lawyer, but you could be one hell of a welder.
Yeah, because not most kids don't have parents that might have a garage or a barn that has equipment, and they see it and they go, man, that's pretty cool. Kind of try that, you know, because that's what I had. My dad had equipment. He had stuff. And he's like, yeah, dude, make stuff here. All these tools here, use them, you know. And I was able to dabble in some of it, work on cars, work on all this stuff, because I was a hands-on guy. I was never going to go work in an office building and sit in a cubicle, never. And my dad was an entrepreneur. You know, I seen my dad, he worked crazy hours, and he did his thing because he did heavy equipment hydraulics. So he would go on site and repair these machines, and he was gone all hours of the day. But when he wanted to not work, he did not work. Like, he would take off and go to, you know, jump in the camper and take off for a weekend or two or whatever. You know, and every sweat and blood and everything that he put in time and he put in his company was for him and for us. It wasn't for somebody else and building their dream. He was building his own dream, and that's what I want to do.
Exactly.
I don't want to sit here and put, you know, 60 hours in a week for somebody else. I want to do it for me, you know.
I think that's the best spot to put a fork in it, man. Build your own dream or somebody's going to hire you to build it for them. That's it, man.
Yep.
Awesome. Wes, thank you so very much, dude. I appreciate you being a guest and coming on the show. It was an absolute blast to talk to you. And looking forward to hopefully meeting you and having a drink with you at FabTech this year.
Yeah, no doubt. We're close enough. We might meet up before then. You never know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. You're only about an hour away from me, man. Let's figure this out. We'll get in touch in the DM.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, let's do it.
All right, man. All right. Take care, man. Thanks a lot.